Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is, sheesh, I'm way off the loop today. I'm just going to take a swing at it and say
the 24th.
Shit. I think I should have known that for some reason, but without, anyway. Thanksgiving week, we're giving y'all a Thanksgiving show. We ain't going to go too heavy, too deep today. We just wanted to kind of, you know, give y'all something to carry y'all through while y'all making cranberry sauce.
Especially because we already did a half-hour show that y'all wasn't part of.
Exactly.
pretty much.
Y'all missed a damn good show.
It was a great show.
I mean, I will tell the people the show was about the evolution of television. We'll leave it at that. But and maybe one day we could readdress it under different circumstances. But it was a good show.
We'll have an edited version of it.
Exactly. So, how's everybody? Inka's not with us today. She's home, I guess, getting ready for the holidays, too. So, peace and love to her and Trav and Ivy. But how y'all doing?
I'm good, man.
Are you still going down south?
Monday.
I got confused.
I'm going to go on Monday, and I have to go. I wanted to get on the other side of Thanksgiving.
Definitely.
And I also had some work to finish up this week before I head down. But I'm going to go. My mother lives like an hour away from the Greenville-Spartanburg area and 30 minutes away from the Columbia area, which is on the other side. So I'm going to fly into Greenville and stay in a hotel there, get a COVID test. Stay until my test comes back, quarantine until my test comes back, and then go down to my mom's.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got to do this and got to be safe. But to me, that's also a huge deterrent for me to travel at all because you got to take a test before you go. You got to take a test. You should do all these things, but I rather just not go. But obviously, I know you guys, you haven't seen your mama forever, but people are like, oh, when you going to go back to Atlanta? I'm like, first of all, I'm not in a while because it's mountains down there. But also, it would be a headache. I got to take a test here, then I got to take a test before I get back on a plane down there. And God forbid, somehow I do test positive down there, I'm fucked.
Right.
Because I could find a place to stay, but I got to stay there for 2 fucking weeks.
Right.
And can't see nobody. Ain't going to be like, oh, I stayed there for 2 weeks and I was doing this and that. No, I stayed there for 2 weeks and I sat in my man Ike's bedroom.
Right.
For 2 weeks. It's not worth it. It's like, nah, I'm just going to be easy, man. So,
yeah.
Obviously, we want you to be safe, going and coming back and, you know, want mom to be safe and want you to have a good time in some form of fashion.
I'm going to be easy, but I was actually worried because, you know, all our numbers are going back up so rapidly. We're at like 5,000 cases a day in New York for the past 2 weeks.
Nuts. And our area is one of the two hottest spots in the city. It's us and Staten Island. We're both orange zoned for now. I'm sure it'll change, but right now, like Washington Heights and Staten Island are like basically like danger zone, like chill.
I don't go outside. Like I've been telling people I don't go outside, they don't believe me. But I haven't seen, you know, I haven't seen mom in a year. I figured to a certain extent, you know, if she and I are also isolating, because I know my mom is very careful. So as long as I take precaution,
we'll be good.
We'll be good.
And you ain't gonna do nothing when you get there, but hang out in the crib anyway. So it ain't like y'all gonna be out in the streets. So
right, we ain't gonna do shit.
Yeah, what up, bro? How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Ready, getting ready for Wednesday. I know you said you scaled the way down.
Oh yeah, we definitely, we doing maybe shit a third of the people we normally do. Normally we at like, you know, damn near 35 people, man. We probably gonna have 8, 9.
Yeah, I've been over there. I think I came with it when you came after, and it was a lot of folks. A
lot of people. Yeah, man. So so we're not doing all that this year. We're gonna actually relax. I'm gonna start cooking tomorrow. Yeah, put my greens on.
Yeah,
and get that situation. Let the seasoning sit in.
Hold on. Do you do your greens with the ham hock or with the turkey?
Nah, I do it with the turkey. My brother-in-law.
That's right. He's Muslim.
So we don't use, anytime we do communal food, I don't use pork.
Of course.
If it's specifically for me, I'll use it. God bless my sister. We had to really get on her about not using the pig.
It don't taste the same without the pig.
Yo, man, my sister used to be so adamant about needing to put that pig in there. Man. So, I'll start cooking, man, and then we'll be able to. I just want to relax on Thursday. Like that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. Like, so often, we're going from like Tuesday all the way through to the end of Thursday. We eat like one plate, and then you get up on Friday, and even though people have helped you clean, there's still a bunch of shit for you to clean and furniture to move, and I'm just not really looking forward to any of that, man. I want to actually sit down, watch the game, and that's it.
Yeah, I think I said in the show last week, I was thinking about, contemplating going to see, Julian and a couple of my other relatives too, but especially now with this orange thing came out, I think I'm just going to chill on Thursday, man. I'm just not comfortable traveling, especially because I would have to take public transportation. I would have to take the train, the subway to the Metro North, and then do that coming back. And it's like, so my man Rich, who used to live on the same block, 150th, he's a chef. And he does the crab boil and all that stuff. And so he's doing a Thanksgiving thing. So I ordered some food from him. So he's going to bring me over half a pan of some shit. And, I'll probably go sit here and just chill, man. I'll probably go see my family sometime over the course of the weekend. But, and honestly, interesting enough, in my little, raggedy-ass six-person poll, the people I've talked to, most of the people I've talked to are really scaling down. And I've even talked to some people who say they're not going to do nothing. I know there's going to be a lot of people that are, but it made me feel good to know that some people are taking this serious and not really doing much.
For me, fortunately, since mom's not going to be here, it's not really going to be that difficult. I usually either do somebody's house for Christmas or somebody's house for Thanksgiving. I don't do both.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have one of those days to sit my ass in the house and watch The Godfather or The Wiz. Or whatever. And so last year we were out all day and night for Thanksgiving. So Christmas, my ass was in the house. So I alternate. So this is easy for me. I'm gonna go to the grocery store this evening to shop, but I already got my ham that came. I'm gonna make some dressing.
you got your toothpicks to put the pineapple and the cherries on.
Yeah, I got my toothpicks. I'm gonna make some dressing. I'm gonna make some greens. I'll make some mac and cheese and eat on it, and take whatever's left with me to New York. But I don't think it'll be left if I cook. I'm not gonna cook today. I'm gonna shop today. I'm watching Whitney's son for a little while tomorrow, and then I'll cook tomorrow night.
Okay.
Or I'll cook on Thursday because I'm not going nowhere. It's not like I have dinner ready.
So peace and love to everybody out there who for this holiday, whatever you're doing, hopefully you're being safe. But whatever you're doing, be careful, be safe, because, it's real. Like Nigel said, the numbers are going up crazy. And, we don't want to hear any stories about any of y'all like, my auntie got sick or this. Like, well, hopefully we'll not have to hear that. Mm-hmm. A quick RIP to David Dinkins, former mayor of New York City, first and only Black mayor of New York City to date, who passed away yesterday at 93 years old. His wife, Miss Joyce Dinkins, passed away, maybe a month
October,
or two ago?
Like 14th or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and they've been married, I don't even know. It's had to be at least like
63 or something.
Something that don't really happen no more, sadly.
Right.
And, they both were of, very elderly. And I'm sure at that point, David, Miss Joyce wasn't here and he probably was tired,
Yeah. I think he hung back long enough to see this Trump shit shut down. Because, yesterday Trump finally said they could go ahead and move forward with secession. And, you know, your man Rudy's been having meltdowns all over TV. So Mayor Dinkins was my grandparents' attorney before he got into politics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I didn't, by the time I came around, like they would talk about him if you brought him up. But I ran into him and I've told the story on IG. I ran into him and Charles Rangel one day. Doing what, coming from wherever the fuck they was coming from, doing whatever they was doing. Like, they just looked like they was up shit. Yeah. Like, in a good way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
they were still, underneath it all, they were still niggas. Yeah, exactly.
They were still niggas, exactly.
Yeah.
And I stopped in the street and talked to them. I introduced myself to Mayor Dinkins, told them who I was and everything. But I just, the other thing that I was talking about both on Twitter and on Instagram is that, like, it took me probably until my 30s to really understand, like, it was probably like Giuliani might have been towards the end of his term before I really understood how much Giuliani had consciously, like, wiped.
He did Dinkins what Trump did to Obama. It's literally the same, exactly, it's the same playbook.
He jacked his whole shit. And, like, for listeners who don't know, because I'm realizing that people not from New York don't really know the story, Dinkins ran against Giuliani to mm-hmm. begin with. Beat him. So Giuliani obviously is incensed that the first black man, you know, beats him for mayor of New York. Dinkins was elected the same in 89, which was the same year of the Central Park case, the same year of Yusuf Hawkins. Mm-hmm. And it's believed that the protests around the Yusuf Hawkins case really is what drove him to win.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because such a huge black vote came out. Yeah.
And then in 91 was the Bensonhurst riots, which was 3 days, Brooklyn, blacks versus Jews. And
Crown Heights.
That's right. Yusuf was Bensonhurst. And Giuliani took the opportunity to say that the reason, even though it's been proven that it was the police who really just didn't react appropriately, Giuliani said that, Dinkins held them back on purpose to hurt the Jews because he was a black nationalist. Mm-hmm, there was mm-hmm. that. Then in 92, there were riots up here by us. There was riots right up here in my neighborhood, Washington Heights, because a cop shot a Dominican kid. Mm-hmm. And then over the next 3 days, like, they were setting cars on fire. Somebody was chased off a fucking roof up here on Audubon. And then Mayor and the NYPD wanted military grade weapons. Dinkins said no. And Dinkins paid for the kid who got shot's funeral. So of course that incensed the NYPD. So then the NYPD, like a month or so later, has a 10,000 person protest in front of mm-hmm. City Hall mm-hmm. with Giuliani at the middle of it. They are wilding the fuck out. Like, mm-hmm. it started as a peaceful protest. It ended up being, like, their Russian city
of
hall.
Course, of course, tearing of course. Up
shit, terrorizing people. They fucking with the black city council members. Again, Giuliani right at the dead middle of it. And that was basically, like a campaign rally for him down there. Yeah. You know, like,
I said, it was like the Trump playbook towards Obama is literally mm-hmm. taken from, I mean, many things, but that is
definitely that.
Yeah, Giuliani definitely, like, gave him all the fucking intel on how to do this shit.
And then, like, let me erase everything you did. All that shit Giuliani takes credit for like, the crime rates dropping mm-hmm. or, you know, turning New York around to make room for, like, you know, becoming more prosperous and more tourist-friendly again. Like, Mayor Dinkins brought the U.S. Open to New York. My understanding is that he brought Fashion Week to New York. Mm. Like, there's a few little things that you don't even really think about. Somebody said that he was the first elected in New York, and I gotta verify this, who actually gave any kind of AIDS funding, like, back when he was a borough president. So it's like, people have really fond memories of him, but just Giuliani's presence looms so large behind his his legacy.
Especially with Giuliani, now I don't want to do politics today, but mm-hmm. and we've talked about this before, but like, what people outside the city didn't know, maybe some of them have figured it out now, is, you know, this whole America's mayor shit and blah, blah, blah. Like, Giuliani was done. done enough. To 9/11. The white and black people, we all hated him. He's a piece of shit.
We were like, enough,
he,
get out.
Like he publicly shitted on his wife. Like he's a fucking, as we see, he's a fucking horrible person, a piece of shit. And it was, he was done. Like 9/11 literally saved his political career because he was,
he wouldn't have been able to touch the national stage.
We hated him. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, so
his approval ratings were like in the teens or something.
Yeah, like he was a piece of, like I said, again, I'm going to make sure it's clear. White and black people hated him. It wasn't just like the hood hated him. Everybody in New York didn't fuck with Giuliani. But anyway, yeah, so we want to say peace and love to the Dinkins family and, you know, your relative, your uncle, your father, your grandfather, whatever the situation is. He's a great man. He did a lot of great things. And he repped Harlem very, very well. Want to mention, and I know I'm only going to be the one to mention this, but I watched this Tekashi 6ix9ine documentary on Hulu. Bullshit. Yo, I'm telling
you. Promise you don't care.
No, I know. It's cool. But let me just say, it's really well done. It's really good. It's really well done. It's really balanced.
But well done for what, though? Like, what are we supposed to learn?
Well, because I think what the gist of it, of the documentary was, it was about him, of course, but it was also more about how this new age of quote-unquote celebrity via internet and how it can happen and happen so fast, and he became such as this mega, you know, personality, yes, based on a couple of records that he had, but based on the trolling and how he mastered the use of Instagram and the use of the internet to kind of propel himself forward. It was more about that than just about, yes, it definitely was about music and the gang. It was it encompassed everything, is my point. Like, it was really a balanced documentary. It talked about a lot of different things. It talked about his childhood. Like, it talked about a lot of things. So you don't come out feeling sorry for him. You don't come out. He doesn't come out looking like a victim. He doesn't come out looking like he was this great guy that's kind of led down the wrong path. He comes out looking like what he probably was. What he was is a clout chasing piece of shit, you know. And he paid the price for it. But it's just I just thought I watched it. I didn't really think I was going to be that compelled when I watched it, but it was pretty good. Again, I know your niggas are not going to watch it, but
I'm happy to take your word for it.
And it's pretty good, though. Yeah.
But wait, but have you watched any of The Crown, though? Did we have this conversation last week? We did.
Yeah, you mentioned The Crown, but I didn't watch The Crown. So I'm doing The Undoing, which I'm going to mention. Right. And I started something else. I just kind of glanced into something else the other day. Shit, I can't remember what it was. I started watching something, another kind of
shit. Donnie, you watching it?
No.
So
mostly because I never jumped in from the beginning.
Right. Well, that's when I started from the beginning.
Yeah.
So I've never been an Anglophile at all. Like, and I really do think that maybe this is just me. I think that if you were of age when all of Charles and that shit went down,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to dive into it now because we got so beat over the head with it. Then, at least for me, right? Like, when Princess Diana died, it was every kind of expose story behind the scenes. And I mean, I was sad too.
The world, it was the biggest story in the world by far. It was a close second.
And also, like, for a while, for a minute, you know what I'm saying? And so often thereafter, and then we had to relive it all, like, her poor kids, we had to relive it all with William and Kate. I can't imagine what it would be like to actually be in the UK with the intensity of all of this, but I got into The Crown. I was like, all right, clearly, because I think Kelly has talked about it over the years because she was watching it, but, you know, she's a history buff, but I could tell from the way she would talk about it, it was interesting. I had just never been more than passably interested in House of Windsor in general, but I actually, now that I've watched it, I find them fascinating up until Charles and his sister and his other brothers. Like, up until them, like up
Charles
until
Edward,
up until
Charles, Edward, Andrew.
Yeah, and Anne, I think Anne's interesting because she's got some spunk, but like, I find them all the way up to Margaret and Queen Elizabeth and Philip and all of them, they are fucking fascinating. And and dramatic and like complex and crazy and like all kind of scandals and skeletons in the closet. Like your man Prince, like your man King Edward, when he had to abdicate the throne, like this motherfucker was about to help. Because after I watched the Crown, somebody recommended a docuseries for me to watch to kind of supplement it. But your man was like corresponding with Hitler and them. He was about to help them invade London so that Wallace could be queen. Like it was crazy. Like you about to help them invade your brother so that you can get the throne back. But mm-hmm. I think I want to go back and dig a little bit more into them. Sorry, that's the siren's been going. But I don't need to do any more Charles and Di anything. Like I don't need to do no more Charles, Camilla, Diana, Dodie, none of that. I don't need to do none of that. But it's a very complicated family. I can't imagine what it's like to live that life. And Pete, yeah. I think I have a more sympathetic view of Queen Elizabeth because she was taught that her entire role
is this.
Was to be a symbol. But was also like to be a symbol. Like you don't mm-hmm. show up, you don't show too much emotion, you don't give your opinion, you don't interfere.
Yeah, you don't. I don't know how long ago, it was years ago, but it was, I guess, around the 80s or whatever, but she came to America because, interesting, just a little small side, and it ain't nothing to do with my family directly, but the Windsors own horse farms.
Oh yeah, they show when she came to Kentucky for the first time.
Yeah, she comes, they come to Kentucky every year. I don't know about now because she's a little older, but they would come every year. And
she had a stable in.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And they would like be there like for a minute, like when they like, pop in and out, like they, you know, they wouldn't be like in the fucking diner or something, but like they'd be in town, you know, and she came to Kentucky one time, and I guess she went to visit some people. I guess it was in Kentucky. I'm not sure, actually, but she came to visit people. And they took her to this black lady's house, and she walked into the black lady's house, and the black lady hugged her, right. And it became like an international scandal because nothing to touch her.
Yeah.
You know, and the black lady was like, yo, when people come into my house, I give them a hug. And they were like, oh, my God. So
it was
like,
an international incident. That's crazy.
Yeah, and it was, yeah. I was showing like the levels and the depth of that monarchy and what you're supposed to do and not do. And if somebody does something even as innocent as that, it becomes a scandal because of the symbolism of the monarchy. So it is a very interesting thing. I also wanted to mention the Fresh Prince reunion show. Did y'all get to watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch
really
it,
well done.
No, I didn't watch it.
It's pretty good. It's kind of long though. It's a little longer.
I think it is.
I
would guess it is. But for whatever reason, like I went into HBO Max, I was gonna watch it, and I guess I don't have HBO Max, and it was like $15, and I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't $15 want to watch this shit.
Yeah, it's
I
a whole a separate trial thing.
For it. I did the trial for it, and then it was hard to find. People had already we were talking about UIs of these streaming services, and somebody had said HBO Max was terrible. It's crazy because they had the Fresh Prince series itself really prominently featured because of the 30th anniversary, but you couldn't find the reunion special in that. It was stupid. Yeah. Anyway, I found it. I thought it was really well done, and even though, like you said, it runs long, I feel like that was done to kind of make you feel like you were visiting with them. You know what I mean? Like, there were moments that they let linger. Like they were watching the Avery clip.
Yeah.
And they just kind of let that sit.
Yeah, when it ended, they let that sit.
While they were sniffing, they just kind of let it, you know, they're wiping eyes. They just kind of let that sit. So I appreciated that we're not going to do quick cut. Type of thing. And I found myself was interested. So like, I definitely was a Fresh Prince fan, but it wasn't like I wasn't a hardcore Fresh Prince fan. Like I don't even remember watching the finale. I don't know if I've ever seen the finale. I'll be honest, I don't know if I've ever seen the finale. I've seen the clips of it. I can't remember if I actually ever watched it. I was in college by then, and you know we didn't have the DVR yet, and I was really doing VCR taping in school, and but watching the last scene, they started the reunion with the last scene of the finale, and I was getting teary-eyed. I was like getting choked up. I was like, this shit ain't even start yet. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? I also cry at the last scene of the Cosby Show finale. To this day, that makes me cry every time. But it's like, I was really getting welled up. And there were a couple of moments in there when I was getting choked up. And it wasn't even so much about my nostalgia, but it was watching their emotion, right? Mm-hmm, their emotion. But obviously, you know, what everybody was talking about was Janet.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about that moment? I see Sean's face. He ready already.
I thought that. I thought that. Let me take it back a little bit. I'm glad they did it. I'm glad they included her because she obviously deserved to be included because she's a fucking huge part of the show. Like, you know, I think that Janet. How can I say this? Because it's not phony. So I don't want people to think I'm saying she was phony. I think that Janet had carried a lot of that anger and animosity with her for a long time. And I think that, you know, it's kind of like what, I think it was it Sean? I don't know if it was you talking about. Somebody was talking about, Verses with somebody, which we'll talk about in a little bit, with Gucci and Jeezy. And it was kind of a similar thing in that, they've had this animosity for so long, and we saw it on the Verses. But I think it's also different when you got this animosity towards somebody who you don't actually see. Kind of hear what they might have said, or their man said, "Yo, da 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 da." And I think that, but when you actually see the person, again, not to say they're gonna be fucking bosom buddies, but I think it deflates it a little bit. And I felt like that happened on Verses, and I felt like that happened with Will and Janet, especially with Janet. I think she damn near hated Will because he ruined her fucking career and her life.
Did he ruin her career?
Well, I'll put it like this. Maybe ruined it strong, but it didn't help. It didn't help.
Okay, so here's my theory.
I think that when she saw him, she probably felt like, I must tell this motherfucker, blah, blah, blah. But she didn't do it that. And that she did kind of get at him, but in more of a... But you could also tell that she was actually... She's actually kind of happy to see him.
Yeah.
I think he was really kind of happy to see her. And they had their conversation. And again, I don't think they're going to be inviting each other for Thanksgiving and nothing like that. But I think that it put a piece on both of their lives, hopefully, in a way where especially with Janet, where she could kind of move forward. And maybe, you know, if this corona shit ever comes to some place, start working again without that kind of stigma of you're difficult, you're mean, you're da-da-da-da hanging over her head. That's what I thought.
So here's my theory. So I went back and I was looking for the different press that, you know, that was done about it at the time, whatever. I can only find Will on record one time talking about Janet. And it was in 93, which was soon after it happened. And he said, I know she's going to dog, and I'm paraphrasing to an extent. I know she's going to dog me out whenever she talks about me. Like, you know, she thinks I'm evil, but it's because she wanted it to be the Fresh Prince. No, she wanted it to be Aunt Viva Belair. Like, she wanted the show to be Aunt Viva Belair, right?
And I could see that.
Exactly. What I think it was first of all, Will was 20, right? Will's 20. He's new on the scene. His first ever acting job, and he gets title role in a primetime show on the number one network in the country, right?
And then the show goes the number one show. It blows up.
Right. I think that Janet, who comes from stage, and you know, there's a thing that stage actors already have a little bit of disdain for TV actors, is like, and I think she even said this one time that she was like, you know, this young kid, he can't even, like he was saying in the reunion, like he used to mouth his lines because it was also new to him.
But remember, even Daphne Maxwell said they offered her the role and she said, with a rapper, fuck no.
Right, exactly.
I'm not doing that.
I think Janet had a little bit of an air of superiority. And I kind of checked somebody on this because I was like, when people talk about this, everybody is like, we're not going to do the angry black woman angle. But what people forget is that there's also like the hoity senior actor situation too, like senior actor, junior actor, seasoned talent, new talent dynamic too. I think that's what was at play. I think she definitely was trying to like some Will on set. I can 100% see that. And that Will's kind of like, yo, fuck you, this is my show. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that was the tension between them. Janet also said at one point, so her pregnancy broke the contract. And think about it like this. And Sean, I'm sure you can relate to this. They had to rewrite the entire season because she couldn't hide her pregnancy. Like when Felicia Rashad was pregnant on Cosby, they hid it. They had her sitting behind shit. She on big ass coats.
Janet Hubert,
you couldn't, she was carrying in a way that you could not camouflage her. So they had to rewrite a whole season, add a whole new fucking character, right, into this series because of her. So if I'm Will Smith and it's like, you had to change my whole show around for your ass, it's my show. Like, I definitely have a problem with that. But it allegedly broke her contract. But what she expected to happen was, when she was talking about that bad deal on the reunion, did say once that she got a shit deal. She told Will she felt like Will should fight for her. And Will was kind of like, why would I do that? Like, his thing was more like, why would I do that, right? And so what I really think it was legally, she couldn't throw shots at Benny. She couldn't throw shots at Q. She couldn't throw shots at showrunner. So at the showrunner, so she threw shots at Will. And over the years, as Will's career blew up, those shots got more pointed because she was actually mad, like the nerve of this motherfucker to actually become a fucking box office sensation off of this. But I think that Will has always carried an outsized amount of blame for her being let go from the show, because when people now think about it, they're thinking about Will Smith in terms of Will Smith as he is now. Will Smith was not the boss of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
At all.
Right. Quincy D. Jones and fucking Benny Medina. And whatever them showrunner's name was, they were the bosses of that show.
I think it was Ruben Cannon. I'm not sure who the showrunner might have been.
I can't even remember. But like, even by the third season when Janet left, Will, like, yeah, it was a number one show, but Will wasn't big enough then to be like, nah, she got to go. Nah, she got to stay. Nah, it wasn't that at all. He just didn't fight for her. So I think there was some entitlement there. And I think that over the years, she has just been feeding more into it. And I think, like you said, when she saw him, it was really a relief because all she really wanted, I think, was just to feel like she was welcomed back into...
to the fold.
This fold, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So...
Here you go. The other executive was Winifred Harvey. That's what it was.
That whole
Steve Harvey show.
That whole connection was partly why I had no interest in watching this reunion, to be quite honest. I would never feel like that was authentic because of the venom in which she spewed recently. Like, we're not talking about, yo, I pulled up some shit from 1995 that she said.
Like three years ago.
Like 3 years ago, she was going on social media eviscerating him and his wife. Talking crazy.
True.
And so for this to now come full circle, I mean, listen, Will and Jada's brand now is accountability and kindness.
Right.
And so Will, you know, Will doesn't lose any skin in the game. He actually gains more by putting that olive branch out for her.
And he very much let her talk. Like, he was very much like, what's your story? What was your perspective?
Yes.
I want to hear how you received it. Like, that was clearly to let her get that shit out.
Yes. And to me, I don't need to get that out. You know, God bless, you know, Miss Janice. She is, you know, a trained actor. Man, but Janet, she's like 65. She like, you know.
Miss Janice is making us sound more country.
Miss Janet. But the whole thing is like, you know, she was the adult in the room and somebody who has experience and someone who has experience, particularly in entertainment. I've always felt like it's your job to not put that on people that, you know, aren't in a position to call that shot.
True.
And like you said, she had, you know, issues that she wanted resolved and she couldn't really resolve them. And so he kind of became the punching bag because he was kind of
he was an easy target.
He was easy, right? And so if that probably occurred. And listen, for the sake of argument, again, we're all talking about this with hindsight being 2020. I think they're in like season 2. Like, there's no guarantee that this is going to go and
turn
become
to what it became.
Become what it became, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And remember, Will was scrapping out of tax issues.
Right.
Music was not paying in the way that we think of now.
Well, like, yeah, he was only one album deep.
Yeah, he clearly talks about having financial issues during that time. And this was almost like a lifeline for him.
It was.
And so for her to have all of that knowledge for 20 plus years and still come out and again, this wasn't a, I'm big on body language. I'm big on tone. I'm big on, you know, people say things when they're in emotional states and you can kind of grasp that. You can also kind of grasp when people have a venom and they just respond to people with such animosity. Like that was just wild to me to watch. Like, this is a grown woman. This is a grandmother type. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, for her to behave the way she did, to me, it was just an absolute turn off. And I'm not judging whether or not it was to carry the weight. I'm saying for me, I don't want to see that. I don't believe it. Because I don't believe it.
When her son died in 2014, she said it was Will's fault.
That's crazy. Here's what I think happened. I think when you have this is a part of her legacy. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, you know, you have to remember is that when you're even when you're a small part of a show, you still should be a part of that show, right? Like, fucking Mr. Bentley wasn't, you know, a star of the Jeffersons, but if there's a Jefferson reunion, you want to see Mr. Bentley.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I get all of that. But, like, just to place blame and to place this on other people when, again, she had the opportunities to go elsewhere, stage, dance. She is trained. Like, I just...
I think her agent
said, look, this is an opportunity for you to scale back on some of the things that you put out there and for you to absolutely go out and change perception.
The persona. Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say, too, look, we can say we don't want to be the angry black woman stereotype, and that's fair, and we understand what that stereotype is.
But sometimes
you're the angry black woman, and that's what she was. She was the angry black woman in this case, and I don't think it's fair that we, in an effort to sort of shield that stereotype, that we don't apply what is the truth. And the truth is, she was being very mean and very nasty.
Yeah. I also think she probably was actually difficult to work with on set. Like, people have said her, and I could tell just from the way she said it. She said something like, I wasn't unprofessional. I just didn't talk to anybody. Yeah, if you walking around a set and we're all family on set and you not talking to us and you're isolating yourself from us, that's going to put word out that you're not comfortable. You're not easy to work with on other sets. It's kind of like how it puts me in mind of the famous opera singer Marian Anderson, who was one of like the premier black opera singers, mm-hmm. right? Immensely talented, a fucking notorious bitch. Like, she don't let you look at her. You can't talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
Can't, like, notorious. I had to deal with her once when I was working at Banana Republic. She was terrible, but also immensely talented. Both things can be true. You can be immensely talented and you can be a fucking pain in the ass. And I think that Janet Hubert's idea of professionalism might have translated to I'm better than y'all.
I also feel like this was could have been a similar circumstance to Good Times, in that when the show first started, obviously because Will was new and not a trained actor, whatever, obviously like the show was about him, but you know, you have James and
Don Amos.
No, I'm talking about James on The Fresh Prince. James.
James Avery.
James Avery and Janet Hubert on that. Like, that, and I think the show initially probably was kind of like, yeah, he's going to do his little thing, but you know, you are the parents are kind of going to be the centerpiece to it. And then of course, then as Will kind of grew and the show became more popular, I think it shifted a bit, and Will became more of an old kind of overwhelming persona of the show. The same way with James with Good Times initially was James of Florida, who had come from the Jeffersons, so people had familiarity with them. And then JJ was the fucking goofy, you know, was funny. And then over time, they shifted it to almost become like the JJ show, which obviously why James Amos and eventually left. And I think that was, Esther Rowe left.
I think it was
a kind of similar thing with Janet, which I think she was, I know, Will was always the star of the show, but I think that Janet kind of was almost like, well, yeah, it's his show, but like me and Phil are like the old geez here or whatever. And then I think over time, as Will became bigger and bigger, it kind of became like, well, we're not really listening to what you say as much, Janet.
Also, the characters got older, and this happens on every sitcom. The kids get older, you shift away from the parents.
They're not little babies no more, you know?
The show, right. So, you know, one of the things I said is that I really hate how much grief people have given Daphne Maxwell Reed, who had a long career of her own and is a talent on her own, for things that had nothing to do with her. Like, one of these women was like, I can't believe, because they said they never met Sean. And
yeah.
It was a chick who was like, I can't believe they never met. She should have reached out to Janet Huber. I was like, reached out for what?
It was
to extend an olive branch. I was like, it wasn't her olive branch to extend. She had nothing to do with that.
Nigga, do you reach out to the person that got fired on the 4-12?
Like, you take over his job.
No.
Exactly.
It was like, she was like, no, but it could have smoothed it over. No, it's not about it. It definitely has no part. It's not.
Daphne's smoothing over. What's Daphne smoothing over?
Nothing. It's not anything. Her business. It has nothing to do with her. I think people take this shit way too, like, I mean, I don't want to say take it way too seriously, but like, it's a job. And also, you know, people be like, well, she wasn't as good at Aunt Viv. They rewrote the role.
It's a different thing.
Now there's a little kid. So Vivian Banks is a stay-at-home mom and she's got to be more motherly. Now Carlton and Will are in the pool house, so the centerpiece isn't even the main house, it's the campus and the pool house, and sometimes the main house. And like, also probably in part because Janet started like taking up more space in the storyline, I think they intentionally moved Phil more up to the front as the father figure and moved Viv, you know, more
a little bit pushed to the back.
Yeah.
So, but overall, it was, you know, if you haven't seen it, it's a very good piece. It's a very good reunion. It's done really well. It's everything. It's funny. It's very emotional at times. You know, very, very emotional times. It's, you know, redemption. It's everything. And everybody's there.
One thing I wanted to point out is that when Karen Huber joined the rest of them on set, Alfonso was
Janet Huber.
Didn't I say Janet Huber?
You said Karen.
You said Karen from Real Housewives.
And Janet Huber joined the rest of them on set. Alfonso was ghost. He does not.
He don't fuck with her at all.
Ain't no hug and kissing.
Yeah, it's like, I'm out. Well, that nigga's from the Bronx originally, so he still got that.
ain't he Dominican too?
Dominican or something like that. Yeah.
He's never letting that go.
Nigga be 80 years old. Like, nah, I ain't fucking with her. Speaking of which, real quick, Real Housewives of Potomac. Did y'all watch this week?
Okay, I tried to watch. We'll skip past it.
It was more of the same about the fight. Whatever, we'll skip past it. A couple shows. I watched a show, and I think it's gonna be five of them all together. The Oscar-winning director Steve McQueen, who did 12 Years a Slave, he has a collection of five movies on Amazon Prime about different things that have happened in his homeland of England. But they're all based on true stories that happened, kind of like the English version of the civil rights movement in a way. And one of them, I don't know if it's called Mangrove or it might be called something
else. It's called Mangrove.
It is called Mangrove, right? I watched that. So that's the first one I watched so far. It's very interesting. I had no idea about this story. Like, I had never heard of the story. Matter of fact, I watched halfway in before I even realized, oh wait, this really happened. You know, so I thought it was just like a story, you know, but it's a story about these, Frank Klitschko is his name. And he had opened a bar called the Mangrove in Nottingham. I think he's Jamaican or Trini, one of the two. But he opened up the store of this restaurant called the Mangrove in Notting Hill, which is now like this super high end, you know, upper crust neighborhood in England. But back then it was, you know, a black neighborhood. And the Mangrove is this restaurant that he opens where people can kind of come and, you know, yeah, a little card playing, a little bit of that. But, you know, it's got really good food. And obviously all the people from the neighborhood come because they're getting this authentic, you know, again, I think he's Jamaican or Trini, whatever, but I'm going to say Jamaican for the sake of this conversation. They're getting like this very authentic food, and they're like kind of, and then the police kind of keep fucking with him and breaking it up, and it turns into them having marches, and it becomes riots, and they go to trial about it. And there's it's like a whole big, they're called the Mangrove Nine, because there were nine of them. And they were overcharged for these things by the police. There's one particular police officer was terrorizing them. And this is about like the first, they go to trial and they kind of win the trial. But then what I found out later is like that didn't end it. Like they went on for like 18 years of like them just kind of like constantly terrorizing black people in London, because that's what white people do, especially the police. But it's a very interesting, it's not a documentary, it's a story. It's like a scripted, you know, it's like they're acting.
Yeah.
It's just very interesting. And the woman from Black Panther, who played his sister. What's her name? Who played Black Panther's sister, the one who's really smart.
I would have been able to tell you if you hadn't asked me.
Yeah, but she's in it, and she's fucking amazing. She should definitely get some type of Brits Awards or something. She's phenomenal. But anyway, there's five of them. There's another one with John Boyega coming out next. But you know, really, just really, really well done. I wanted to mention that, and I wanted to mention this other show on HBO Max called Industry, which is very interesting.
Mention that. I just haven't watched it yet. I heard somebody else talk about it. So it's about a trading floor. Is that what it's about?
Yeah, but it's about these young. They're all kind of interns. Mm-hmm. So it's about the young interns in this, you know, this kind of Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley-ish type of company, but it's based in England. They're in England, and they're kind of like what they're doing, and you know, all these kind of maneuvering and behind the scenes shit they're doing, and they're partying together, and they're, you know, having sex, and there's like the whole gay angle. There's all those kind of things they're doing, trying to get, because at the end of it, they get picked to become actual employees or not. So it's just very, and the lead is this young black girl. I've never seen her before. I think she's new, but she's great. So you get a chance to watch that. And then The Undoing, the next week is the season finale. Well, this week is the season finale. Would you watch this week's show, Nye?
This week's show, what?
The Undoing.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts? Who do you think did it?
It's
everybody. Have you watched this, bro? You haven't watched this, have you?
No.
Okay.
I think Donald Sutherland has something to do with this shit. So I'm just waiting.
I think, I'm not mad at that. Yeah.
Like, he's the big boss as far as I'm concerned.
To just be totally innocent. His character is like too big and powerful just to be like.
Way too powerful.
To be like, I had no idea. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Like,
yeah, I've been waiting for some. I think it's got, but also her friend,
the lawyer. Something definitely with her.
Yeah, because the extent to which they use her doesn't make sense unless she's involved.
Yes.
So, like, even in the last,
like, she wouldn't even be in the show at this point. Like the other women who were at the table when they had,
they're not there.
Yeah, because so the fact that she's there is telling me something happened.
It means something. And even I was waiting when they had them on the phone the last episode. At one point, she panned away from her desk after she was updating her about the phone call with his mom, her mother-in-law. And when she panned away from the desk, I was waiting for like somebody to be standing there, because I was like, why are we even having this conversation? That's why I'm just waiting to see what the purpose is
of all of this.
Especially her still being involved. She to me is the puzzle piece that stands out, which makes me feel like she is playing, like, I don't know if she's sleeping with her husband. I don't know if she's sleeping with Donald Sutherland. But I'm like, she has to have something to do with this shit, because otherwise she serves no purpose.
Yeah. So this week is the season finale. I'm very interested to see how they wrap a lot of loose ends up. I want to also mention the AMA. I know you didn't watch the AMAs, did you?
No. I didn't even know it was on. I just happened to see talking about it on Twitter, but I didn't know it was on.
Yeah, I never watched
AMA.
Yeah, I watched kind of flick back and forth and watched kind of a couple of things. And Megan Thee Stallion performing. Did she open the show? No, she didn't open, but Taraji P. Henson hosted, which I thought was interesting because I've never looked at her as that. Not that she did a good job, but I never looked at her as a person who would host an award show. I just never thought of her in that type of way, but she did a good job. And then Megan performed, and some other people. It was all right. It was all right.
What about the BBD performance? How was that?
I mean, they did what they always do. I was actually like, and I know these are your folks, but I was like, what the hell are you on the show for?
It's the 30th anniversary of Poison.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Which actually isn't until next year, but whatever.
I was like, why are these niggas on the show? Like, because the AMAs is a very, very pop, super pop show. So for
Poison was a pop, super pop song. I think
I know, but it's like 35. 90s. It's like 35 years old, though.
It's a nostalgia moment happening.
I'm not mad they were on the show. I just was kind of like, this audience and them don't match in the least bit, because the AMA's audience is super young, teen. You know, it's not. You know, literally their fathers are performing on this. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's my father's. You know. So I was kind of bugged to see them on the show. Let's see, anything else before we wrap up? Did you watch Put a Ring on It, bro?
Yeah, I did, man. What'd you think?
I just have to say, I really enjoy this show.
I'm trying to think of the episode now, because it was so long ago.
This episode was when Shay told that Michael, your son can't live with us.
Oh yes, yeah. I mean, we kind of discussed that, but yeah, I'm good on them. And you know, that other couple, man, they bother me. The photographer dude,
Vincent Tamika.
He bothers me. He bothers me. He triggers her. He knows he triggers her.
He triggers her on purpose. He gaslights her. He gaslights her.
And he does it in this very calming tone, which actually infuriates me even more when I watch it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, a good show. Again, you know, solid show. I enjoy it as an easy watch.
Yeah. But again, I agree with you on that, on Vince, like, because she seems like a nice girl, you know, she comes from a solid family and all that, and like, he's constantly just fucking with her, I'm literally watching this guy, like, ruin her self-conscious confidence and her self-esteem, just ruin it.
She need a good auntie weekend. You need to go get with some aunties and go up to the cabin.
Get a
stern talking to.
Exactly, and come back and get a life together. Let's end it on Verses. So this week passed, we had Jeezy versus Gucci, long-awaited battle. As my opinion, I'm not talking about musically, because obviously a lot of people don't know Gucci's music outside of his region, except for a couple songs. But as far as the like event of it, the event of the verses, this to me was the best one. Just the intensity.
Yeah, it was high-rated. It was the highest rated, but for me, it was the least entertaining.
I actually was very entertained by it. But again, not based on the music. But that's what I meant by the event of it. The event of it made all of our nerves bad, and that was, to me,
I did not find that entertaining. I tune in the verses to have fun. I do not.
It was like watching a prize fight.
Be anxious.
It was like watching a prize fight. Like, I don't know what's going to happen here. Like, somebody might go 12 rounds, nobody might get hurt.
It was too many niggas on the side of the stage for me to relax.
but again, that's what I expected, because that's who, especially Jeezy didn't have as many people on his side. That's who Gucci is. So I expected all that.
But I knew that Tim.
He was late as fuck. You know what I'm saying?
But I knew that Tim and Swizz sat both of them down to have a conversation about.
Cannot tell
and
Gucci
also,
what to do.
I know that Gucci does not want to go back to jail.
Oh, so it wasn't going to be a fight, but you cannot tell Gucci. You can sit down and have a conversation with them, and I'm sure the conversation went great. But Gucci is going to do what Gucci is going to do at the end of it all, and so that didn't matter. And God bless them for trying, but it didn't matter. In my opinion, musically, Jeezy won. Fairly easily. You know, there were some moments, but Jeezy won fairly easily. But the intensity of Gucci playing The Truth, which is a song about him killing Jeezy's friend, for those who don't know, they did a song called So Icy together. Some issues happened with the song that caused them to start having beef. That beef really escalated to the point where Jeezy allegedly sent some guys to Gucci's house, literally to kill him. A shootout ensues, and Gucci kills one of the guys. gets off, doesn't do any time or anything because he killed the man in self-defense, which increased his street legend even bigger. And since that point, I don't think they had ever spoken or even maybe even been near each other. And that's been 15, 16 years ago of this intensity. Gucci made songs, or made a one particular song about it called The Truth, where he describes what happened. But he's done sub shots and not even sub shots for the last 15 years about killing Jeezy's man. And Jeezy's done sub shots of him. And it's been this constant, like, back and forth intensity. But unlike most rap battles, somebody really died. So this is not just like, oh, we're just talking shit because, like, I'm a better MC than you. It's like, no, you sent somebody to kill me. I killed them. And if I get a chance, I might kill you. Like, and it was real. So that was a real moment. And then them kind of coming to a understanding, a piece up towards the end, and, you know, extending an olive branch and all that. That was a huge moment for, you know, for the Southern rap culture, for Atlanta, for the South in general, because again, this was like a real, real beef. It wasn't like some just shit talking between each other. It was very, very intense, like Nas said. There's a lot of heat in there. There was a lot of niggas in there. They did it at Magic City. Like, it was a lot going on. But, you know, it was the most highly rated show. And again, I found it pretty entertaining. What'd you think about it, bro?
I was in and out. Gucci and Jeezy, like I said before, that's not really my music. Again, I get it. Mm-hmm. And I know who they are. You know, I'm not mm-hmm. an old nigga. But, like, I just never got into them in that way. So, in terms of music, I wasn't necessarily interested. I tuned in. And you know me, man. I'm a stickler for time. And by stickler, I mean, even by entertainment standards, that was just egregious. You know, entertainment standards is like, all right, this is some real corporate shit. It's supposed to start at 8. You know, niggas might stroll in around 8:07. You know, shit might start popping around 8:15. You know, these niggas, it was almost 9 o'clock, bro. Like, that's just like now I'm
annoyed. Gucci showed up 8:45. Gucci walked in.
I was told that all of them were doing their COVID rapid test.
Well, they probably were. And the reason they were probably doing that was because they hadn't done it before.
Right.
They didn't do it when they were scheduled to do it, right? Because we all know that COVID, the testing people can come to your home. They can come anywhere. You can meet them anywhere. You know, they do that shit in the car, right? So whatever, Yeah. But they were late and, I mean... It was tense to me, and mm-hmm. I saw people really kind of going hard at Gucci for, like, performing that song where he talks about, you know,
the truth. It's called the truth.
So, you know, I mean, look, man, I don't know where the forgiving line is for everyone, but yeah. I'm kind of sure that "You sent some niggas to kill me" is like way down on the list of shit that's going
on. We're never being in the same room. I'm never being, like, in the same room with you ever again in my life.
I don't, you know, look, man, you know, I've been holding a grudge over some pot rolls for about 12 years. So I definitely ain't the one to talk about holding a grudge.
But niggas trying to kill you, literally.
You know, and so I thought it was very interesting. They were still, you know, sort of trying to, everyone was trying to be the bigger man, so to speak.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, even with Jeezy and his speech about, you know, they throwing shots at each other.
About Pop Smoke, it's about.
Yeah, they throwing shots. And, you know, all that shit, you know, that shit sounds sexy, my nigga. But, you know, that shit ain't, these kids ain't listening to that.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. But, you know, in terms of the battle, again, God bless. There were a lot of people. I'm sure Swiss is going to come with some ridiculous number in the trillions about the impressions that,
48 that they had. 48 trillion impressions.
Yeah. So, you know, God bless. Clearly 1.8. And this is what. You know, this kind of relates a little bit, back to what I was saying before about there, you know, before we taped, about there being such a need and desire for salaciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I will never believe that 1.8 million people tuned in to listen
to that music.
Oh, absolutely not.
They tuned like maybe you might have got like 700, right? Maybe you hit 800, but like half that crowd was tuning in because of the potential
for the pop off.
That's the potential that some shit could go left at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
And
a couple of times in Atlanta.
Oh yeah, with no mask, of course. And a couple of times it felt like things might about to be go left.
Turned, nigga. I shut that shit off. I was like, this ain't really my bag. It's just not. You know what I'm saying? Like I've been in. Like, I know those rooms, dude.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fun to be in.
No.
It is tension filled. And listen, maybe I was just a scary nigga. Who knows? Yeah, but like,
you got to watch everything you do and say.
Yeah, everything.
Like, you could be like, excuse me, man, could you pass a nigga? And it goes anything. So. But I enjoyed it, you know, from the comfort of my living room. So again, maybe I'm a scary nigga too, but I enjoyed it, and I'm happy that nothing did go left, and they kind of came to some type of resolution. Again, they're not going to be best buddies. Ain't nobody come over to my house to watch a game.
And I think I don't mean to cut you off, but for us, we all know that it was never going to be them two. The tension always comes from the other man's.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and. Like we said earlier, these guys are now 40 years old. They have a lot more shit on the line. They are far removed from the streets. They are, you know, they're doing things that are, and when I say far removed from the streets, I mean literally them being in the street, not that they disconnected with their peoples, but they're removed from that world. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, they're not going to risk that. Yeah, they got way too much shit on the line.
Yeah, way too much to lose. Yeah. So that's that. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Everybody out there, be safe, man, and just, you know, be careful and be happy and say your prayers and all that good stuff and just, you know, watch. Don't be up on the Nana and Uncle Clarence and, you know what I'm saying? And all that, you know, and I'm going to be looking on the gram on Thursday, and I'm praying I don't see a lot of flagrant shit, you know.
Oh, you will.
I know.
Oh, you
I know
will.
I am. I know.
You will.
Y'all got anything to say before we wrap up?
Nope.
Nah, I'm good.
Niggas is crazy.
Niggas out here putting a hit on Big Mama. Don't think I don't know. You niggas trying to get the deed.
And get that
Big
house.
Mama house. That's, uh-huh.
and that jewelry box. Yeah, so that's it. Y'all be safe out there, and we'll see y'all next
week. Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook, send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.